Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're going to read from a different chapter this morning. I told you we'd be moving around a little bit. This morning we're reading from... Yes. 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 Chapter 6 of Canto 2. Chapter 6 of Canto 2 is entitled Purusha Sukta Confirmed. Purusha Sukta. Who knows what is Purusha Sukta? What is Purusha Sukta? Okay. Someone else would like to say something about what is Purusha Sukta? Okay, say it a little louder so they can hear.
Glorification of the universal form of the Lord.
Glorification of the universal form of the Lord. Someone else would like to add some understanding to what is Purusha Sukta. Purusha Sukta. You've heard of Purusha Sukta. Purusha Sukta is from Rig Veda. And Purusha Sukta, those are the same prayers that were offered by the demigods to Lord Vishnu when they wanted Lord Vishnu to give relief to Mother Earth by descending on Earth and relieving the Earth of the overburdening presence of the demoniac kings. The Purusha Sukta prayers are prayers to the Purusha. What's the Purusha? What's the Purusha? There's three of them. Which are they? And what is the term Purusha avatar or Purusha indicate as expansions of the Lord? There's a category, one of the six categories of avatars. What we understand about them? They're in charge of the... Yes. They're expansions of the Lord for the purpose of or to carry out the function of creation. Remember in chapter 9 there were creation and annihilation, described in detail. Well, it goes back to chapter 6, because the Purusha forms of the Lord carry out the function of creation and maintenance, and ultimately the cause of dissolution comes from them as well. And the universal form also plays a role in the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the universe. We know the dissolution function from Bhagavad Gita, right? Yes? Would you like to say something about that? The dissolution function? Go ahead. Sure. When Krishna showed the universal form to Arjuna, what did he see? He saw so many things being destroyed, isn't it? Did you read Bhagavad Gita? You haven't read Bhagavad Gita? Okay, well, explains why you can't say much about it. Mystery Bhagavad Gita. In the process, I'm not going to detail just now, but perhaps this evening we'll go into it a bit more, because we're going to back up in chapter 6 and cover some of the initial verses of chapter 6 with the relationship of Virat Rupa to the process of creation. But yes, the prayers are prayers to the universal form. And text 6 is the verse we're covering. Canto 2, chapter 6, text number 6. And this is, in one sense, this is a commentary within the Srimad Bhagavatam on the Purusha Sukta prayers of the Rig Veda. Just like the Bhagavatam is a commentary on Gayatri Mantra, Bhagavatam is also a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And here, Bhagavatam is a commentary, or making commentary, on the Purusha Sukta prayers. In case somebody doesn't know what the Purusha Sukta prayers mean, they can read Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, and have a better understanding of the Purusha Sukta prayers. So here's one of those verses. And Prabhupada is going to take us right into the Bhagavad Gita from the commentary of the Purusha Sukta prayers. Here's the verse. The Lord's arms, Virat Rupa's arms, are the productive field for the great demigods and other leaders of the living entities who protect the general mass. General mass means people. Purport. This important verse of Srimad Bhagavatam is corroborated and nicely explained in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, texts 41 and 42. What's chapter 10, Bhagavad Gita? Opulences of the Absolute, Vibhuti Yoga. So, after disclosing many, many, many of Krishna's opulences at the request of Arjuna to provide a means to always remember Krishna, opulences remind us of the opulent from whom those opulences come. That's if you're Krishna conscious, and if you're not Krishna conscious, opulences remind you of something that you want to steal, or, you know, legally or illegal, get, because you want that opulence, want to be the enjoyer of. But they're Krishna's opulences, and the concluding verses of that chapter are what Prabhupada is referring to in the purport. Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam srimad urjitam eva va tad tad eva vagachchatvam mama tejongshma sambhavam atava bahunaitena kim gyatena tavarjana. Someone knows that verse? Go ahead, you say the whole one from the beginning. Atava. And do you know the translation? More or less?
What is the meaning for knowing all this partial expression, maintaining the whole universe?
Okay. I'll read the translation from the text 41. Know that all opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. Mama teja anksha sambhavam. All opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations, his vibhutis, spring from but a spark of his splendor. But what need is there, Arjuna, of all this detailed knowledge with a single fragment of myself? Who is that? A little louder? Shirodakshay Vishnu. With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. Supersoul. So how does Prabhupada connect 10th chapter Bhagavad Gita with 6th chapter canto to Bhagavatam? Here's the connection. It's like the undergraduate and then the graduate study. There are many powerful kings, leaders, learned scholars, scientists, artists, engineers, inventors, excavators, archaeologists, industrialists, politicians, economists, business magnates, and many more powerful deities or demigods like Brahma, Shiva, Indra, Chandra, Surya, Varuna, Marut, who are all protecting the interest of the universal affairs of maintenance in different positions. And all of them are different powerful parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord Krishna is the father of all living entities who are placed in different high and low positions according to their desires or aspirations. Some of them, as particularly mentioned above, are specifically endowed with powers by the will of the Lord. A sane person must know for certain that a living being, however powerful he may be, is neither absolute nor independent. Now, Prabhupada is going to be giving a strong argument and repeats it 3 times, that this is a formula for Krishna consciousness. The formula for Krishna consciousness is recognizing whatever it is that we have as a power or powers, plural, it's the property of Krishna. And because it's the property of Krishna, it is to be used in Krishna's service. And when one acts in that consciousness, then that's the qualification necessary to leave this place of birth and death and enter into the realm of deathlessness. So, listen to how Prabhupada says that. All living beings must accept the origin of their specific power, as mentioned in this verse, and if they act accordingly, then simply by discharging their respective occupational duties, they can achieve the highest perfection of life, namely, eternal life, complete knowledge, and inexhaustible blessings. This is an argument in favor of Daivi Varnashram. In Lord Chaitanya's talks with Ramananda Roy, he speaks something a little different. He said, that's very good, but it's external, go further. But Prabhupada, in this case, is saying it's sufficient to go back to Godhead. The idea, and the distinction is, going back to Godhead is not the essence. Love of God is the essence. But one, this eligibility for going back to Godhead, let's say that the opposite is, it's sufficient to cut the knot of material affinity because it's that knot of material affinity, the trying to be the enjoyer of that which is not our property, binds us eternally, potentially, eternally, to this material existence. Trying to be the enjoyer of others' property is illegal. You're a criminal, try to enjoy the property of others as if it was yours. But if you recognize this is the property, this, like, this is a rented space. It's the property of someone else, and we're enjoying worshiping Krishna in this space. But it's not our property. We're paying rent or whatever you're doing to take care of the landlord that owns the property or thinks they own the property. So, in God, under the laws of God, it's a simple matter. In principle, it's simple. In practice, it's difficult because we have our attachments. The U-turn isn't so easy. But proprietorship, just like in Ishopanishad, a simple way to describe what is Ishopanishad. It's a treatise. Underlying the whole of Ishopanishad is the treatise of proprietorship. Prabhupada explains that in the purports. Who is the proprietor of everything? Or who is the proprietor of anything? Who is the proprietor of this piece of paper? And expand that, and who is the proprietor of everything? And the sense of proprietorship makes up political doctrines. And people fight for their political doctrine. There's the communists that say everything belongs to the state, and the capitalists say everything belongs to the man who funded it, the capitalist. Anyway, etc., etc. So you have political theology based on senses of proprietorship. And people buy into it. Okay, so collectively is a bigger picture that's coming up next, but individually, how does each one of us act? How do we think? What's the conception of proprietorship? Although the rest of the world around us has a very different idea, our sense of proprietorship is that everything belongs to Krishna. And that includes not only things, but abilities and tendencies. And, you know, somebody can sing nicely, somebody can dance nicely, somebody can cook nicely, somebody can decorate nicely, somebody can manage nicely, somebody something, something, something. And that opulence is the property of Krishna. And Krishna has invested some opulence in each and every one of us. We all have something. That's a gift from Krishna to us. And then if we recognize this came from Krishna, we use it in Krishna's service. Simply by discharging respective occupational duties accordingly, they can achieve the highest perfection of life, namely eternal life, complete knowledge, and inexhaustible blessings, not just in these little vibhutis, but inexhaustible blessings. Then Prabhupada goes the other direction. There are people that don't do that. As long as the powerful men of this world do not accept the origin of their respective powers, namely the personality of Godhead, the actions of maya, or illusion, will continue to act. The actions of maya are such that a powerful person, misled by the illusory material energy, wrongly accepts himself as all in all and does not accept God consciousness. As such, the false sense of egoism, namely, mentioned yesterday, I and mine, has become overly prominent in the world And there is a hard struggle for existence in human society. That is to say, this person says, that's mine. And who are you? Well, I'm me, and that's mine. And another person says, no, wait a minute. You don't know who I am. I'm me, and that's mine. And then you have a dog fight. The intelligent class of men, therefore, must admit the Lord as the ultimate source of all energies, and thus pay tribute to the Lord for his good blessings. Now, the intelligent class of men minimally means the intellectuals or the brahmanas. But the intellectuals have bought into the Iron Mind program big time. And so they're leading people in the wrong direction. So the intelligent class of men means whatever one's occupation, high or low or in between or mixed, the intelligent person recognizes the supremacy of God. So then he says it again, going away from the misuse now to the proper use of opulences and where the opulence is coming from. Simply by accepting the Lord as the supreme proprietor of everything, since he is actually so. He says it again. One can achieve the highest perfection of life. And is that only for like the super rich or the super intelligent or the super beautiful or the super strong or the super renounced? No. Doesn't matter your position. Doesn't matter your position. Big, small, or medium. Doesn't matter. If a person tries to reciprocate a feeling of love towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is satisfied with the blessings of the Lord, he will at once feel the highest peace of mind for which he is hankering life after life. One of the problems of materialistic paradigm is whatever you have, it's never enough. Whatever you have, the satisfaction is not experienced, and so one thinks, I need some more. I need more, or at least I want more. And the more doesn't give satisfaction, so then I need more, and so on. It's an ever-increasing cycle of frustration. And as I want more, and the next person wants more, then we're fighting over the whatever there is, and it's not enough. So the formula is not only recognizing, it's a two-part, recognizing whatever I have, it's the mercy of the Lord, and whatever the other is, whatever he gives me, that's just fine. I don't need more. I can serve Krishna from whatever the position is that Krishna has provided for me. If Krishna sees that I can manage what he's given me nicely, Krishna may give me more. And that's nice. But then more means more responsibility, and more responsibility may mean more anxiety and more headache. But if that's what Krishna wants, then that's what I want. But I don't want more, I just want the satisfaction of Krishna. Simple, but difficult to accomplish because we're on the treadmill of more, materialistic treadmill. Even we're striving spiritualists or striving in Krishna consciousness, this pushing for, you know, a title or property or something. How many dhotis and saris I have, what kind of vehicle I, you know, whether I have this kind of bicycle or that kind of bicycle, whatever. It's always something in the materialistic frame. But a devotee doesn't care for those things, to get from point A to point B and whatever you, whatever. Whatever Krishna provides, I'm satisfied. It's more than just like, okay, it's enough. It's accepting, it's a reciprocation of mercy between Krishna and his devotee. Because it can go the other way. Supposing I have bad health, someone can think, oh, I've done so much for Krishna, why come he's giving me bad health? And a little bad health is okay, but a chronic bad health, that's bad. And so on. Peace of mind, or in other words, the healthy state of mind, can be achieved only when the mind is situated in transcendental loving service of the Lord. The parts and parcels of the Lord are endowed with specific powers for rendering service unto the Lord, just as a big business magnate's sons are empowered with specific powers of administration. The obedient son of the father never goes against the will of the father and therefore passes life very peacefully in concurrence with the head of the family, the father. Similarly, this is the end of the purport, the Lord, being the Father, all living entities should be fully and satisfactorily discharging the duties and will of the Father as faithful sons. This very mentality will at once bring peace and prosperity to human society. Very wonderful purport taken from a description of Virat Rupa. The arms and the part of what the Virat Rupa does is it describes each of the Purusha avatars, and then it describes the sub-creation, like, you know, what Brahma does, the making the details of creation, and part of the details of creation is the varieties of life. And within the human form of life, there's the head, the arms, the belly, and the legs. And we're going to hear some more about the other parts of the form of Virat Rupa. But just on the arms, they're protectors. And those that have some opulence, it's meant for service to the Lord and protection of others. That's what service to the Lord includes. You don't serve the Lord at the expense of the rest of the Lord's creation. You serve the Lord protecting the rest of the Lord's creation. There's a responsibility that comes with opulences, in other words. Trying to remember, there's in Garga Samhita, can't recall. There's a description of a Gandharva. Yesterday there was a question about the planets of the Gandharvas, where are they in the universal structure? And they're within the heavenly region. They have a service for the demigods. So there was one Gandharva who was like, you know, I don't know what you would call it, a pretty boy. And he was using his singing to charm the girls. So he would sing, instead of the traditional Vedic songs, he would sing, you know, Bollywood songs. That type of thing, not literally that, but like that. You know, love songs, and the girls were charmed. Oh, woo, woo. And so some sage saw that he was misusing that vibhuti that the Lord had given him, and he cursed him. You should leave this heavenly realm. You're not fit to have this opulence and use it properly. I curse you. You take birth and become a demon. Because it's demons that have opulences and don't see how to properly use those opulences in service to the Supreme. So he fell and became a demon, or took birth in a demon family. So here we are in the earthly realm, where the rule is use things in selfishness. And the exception is people try to, you know, become a little selfless, that, you know, expanded selfishness. Use your opulences for the welfare of society, then you're a good person. But without an understanding of God, directly serving God. Anyway. As creation comes into being, how it happens and also the purpose of it are important. That's this Purusha Sukta confirmed. The Bhagavatam is connecting Purusha Sukta prayers directly with the platform of devotional service. We're just missing the crying children, that everything else is in place. Bring in the chorus, come on. We got the oboes, we got the bassoons, we just don't have the flutes. Okay, any comments or questions? Yes. He's louder than you are. Can you do it again? My mind is attracted by that sound.
Being dissatisfied with one's progress.
And striving for more and more progress. Trying for more and more spiritual progress.
So that sort of dissatisfaction.
That's different.
Is it?
Well, it's potentially different. Depends on if that dissatisfaction is ego-based. Ego-based is like we were discussing yesterday. He asked a question about, you know, we plan events and events don't go well, and how, you know, how should we regard making the events go well? So if we're in the controlling doership, I want to be better because then I'll get recognition kind of a spirit, and I'm going to do it rather than I'm going to receive mercy from, I'd like to receive mercy from Krishna and become closer to Krishna and pleasing to Krishna. Then that can be, you know, a mix of spiritual purpose or spiritual orientation, but, you know, egoistic in spirit. And it's, you know, until we're pure, it's a mix. So, you know, humility needs to be on the spiritual platform. And striving to improve needs to be on the spiritual platform. We should be monitoring that, knowing that there's a mix. Anything else? I'm expecting some nice questions from our ladies before I leave. Okay. Stay in the moment. Be present with Krishna. Don't live in the past or in the future. Live in the moment. Live in the present. Be present with Krishna. Krishna is giving you some service. Be attentive. Intelligence is able to discern principles, and principles apply over time. Although the circumstances may change, the principle still applies. And how you apply a principle is according to time, place, and circumstance, but the principle doesn't change. So when you're being from the past, instructions that you received, they're principle based, applied in a particular circumstance. You extract in the new circumstance, what's the principle? And it requires intelligence, how to apply it, time, place, and circumstance. I was just thinking, it's a problem if you don't have intelligence. I was waiting, how do you get that? Krishna supplies it. Because the purpose of intelligence is to reach Krishna. The Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mamubhiyanti Te. That's the purpose of intelligence, is to reach Krishna. To reach Krishna means to please Krishna. And how to apply a thing in a proper way requires intelligence. How to please Krishna. Prayer for attitude is part of life. Part of a life of devotion. By Krishna consciousness. By Krishna consciousness. You know, the conditioned tendency is strong, but Krishna consciousness is stronger. Light is stronger than darkness. And that light is Krishna consciousness. It's reality. And the other is illusion. So declare war on illusion and commit to Krishna. And just continue like that. From Krishna is situated within the heart, and he can give either remembrance or forgetfulness. And if our desire for our relationship with Krishna, something like, you know, the discussion the other day about desiring, we know. Were we here yesterday? Okay. I was asking a question, why we can't simply make a U-turn, going down the path of material life, life after life after life, and decide this isn't a good program. I want to go to Krishna. I want to be with Krishna. Why can't we just make a U-turn and go to Krishna? It should be simple. because our desire for being with Krishna isn't so strong. And the others, and therefore the residual tendencies control the situation. We're saying yes to Krishna pretty weakly, you know, in a feeble manner. And it's as was being repeated, perhaps out of frustration. And when the frustration, when the pain, the pinch, the ouch of the material circumstance subsides, then it's business as usual. Often, our desire to be in our relationship with Krishna is insufficient in strength. And so darkness creeps in, conditioned tendencies. Okay. Is he back here? Okay. This is from Navayovana. When we hear these descriptions from Srimad Bhagavatam, the material authorities and personalities with whom we have to deal with within our day-to-day life seem insignificant in comparison to Krishna's total control over everything. But when we get down to day-to-day dealing with these personalities, looms very large. How do we translate this hearing experience to our day-to-day dealings? We'll hear a lot and hear well. And when it enters deeply, when it touches the heart, it enters deeply and becomes... It's how the Bhagavatam, the absorption in Srimad Bhagavatam works. It takes over. It becomes how you see the world in progressive manner. A little bit like the same question. The dimmer switch. We're used to these off-on, they're called rocker arm switches. Off-on, a one or a zero. Then there's a dimmer switch. It's not exactly a one or a zero. It's... So how much, how strong is the desire to be in our relationship with Krishna is going to determine how well, when we're in our day-to-day circumstances of life, you know, you have yours and the students have theirs and the housewives have theirs and everybody has theirs. The quality of our hearing and chanting is the dimmer switch. And if you've heard and chanted nicely, it will stay with you. That's my experience. And the converse is also. Krishna is very happy to extend his internal potency. It's a question of, do we want it? How strongly do we want it? So it's helpful to do things from time to time that very, very strongly elevates that desire. Like here, you all have yatras twice a year, and it gives a very strong impetus to go beyond the day-to-day. And that lasts for a while. And then things settle back to day-to-day again. But to get a glimpse of that higher consciousness, having a stronger desire to be in our relationship with Krishna, it's a whole other experience of life. And that's what this human form of life is meant to accomplish on a regular basis. So Our sadhana is our vehicle. That's our dimmer switch. And it's our hand that's on the dimmer switch, not somebody else's. Krishna's not holding himself back from us. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.